as a person of color, I have a problem with justifying cannabis recreational legalization now because it makes good financial sense, but sort of ignoring the trauma that's been inflicted on communities of color for the last 50, 60 years.
This is a cultural change. I think it's similar, although not as important, as gay marriage.
Here's an industry that is one of the fastest growing in the world and in the country, and if thoughtfully regulated, can really provide some pretty enormous economic benefits, particularly for rural areas.
And we've talked so much about diversifying our economy. Well, here's an opportunity for us. I've seen a lot of different projections, a lot of different models, but you could easily be talking $100, $200 million in additional revenue for the state, more possibly.
Welcome to Growing Forward, a podcast exploring the cannabis industry in New Mexico. I'm Megan Kamrick, correspondent for New Mexico PBS, a host at KUNM, and a former business reporter.
And I'm Andy Lyman, reporter for New Mexico Political Report. I've spent years covering the medical cannabis program here in New Mexico, decriminalization efforts, and past attempts to legalize the drug for recreational purposes. We're starting this podcast because we know the debate over legalization will definitely be front and center in next year's legislative session.
That is true, especially when you consider the possibility of a new revenue source for the state, which is now an economic crisis thanks to the COVID-19 outbreak. This week, we want to lay out our plans for this season and preview some of the topics we'll cover and the people we'll introduce you to. Andy, discussions about medical use of cannabis has been going on since the 1970s, at least. And yet, nearly 50 years later, there seems to be a lot of confusion about the drug, its medical benefits, and what happens if it's legalized for recreational use.
There's a lot of moving pieces to try to keep straight on this. You're right. There's the current medical program, and there's questions over what that program should be doing now, what it should be doing in the future, the interplay between the medical program and the potential recreational program going forward. I think legislation is going to have to address some of these issues or rulemaking. There's a lot of questions over who's going to be in charge of this recreational program, whether the Department of Health will remain in charge of the medical program. There's lots of stuff to talk about.
Yeah, I was a business reporter for 14 years, eight of those in New Mexico. I covered a lot of different industries. I have to say, never reported on one that was in such a strange gray area between being illegal, being a medicine, and potentially a whole new way to bring revenue to a state that currently relies on just a few key sectors to fund its budget.
In 2020, during the session, the legislature felt that the state was flush and had plenty of revenue. But next time, going into the session, I think there's going to be a real feeling that, you know, we need those 11,000 jobs that this industry could create.
I'm a reporter with New Mexico Political Report, and I've been covering this issue since about 2015. Some of the things I've seen change over the years is just the governor's viewpoint on this. In 2015, the governor was Susana Martinez. In 2010, when she ran for governor, she said she was going to do away with the program, and she sort of walked that back a little bit. But it was very hands-off approach from her Department of Health. It became sort of the Wild West, as we've heard from some of our guests.
Because there was really no oversight, or there wasn't aggressive oversight. It was just kind of a hands-off. We don't really want to go forward. We don't really want to roll it back. Let's just ignore it.
Right. There was a lot of questions about how do we regulate things? And even now, you and I have learned is that there is sort of still a hands-off approach from the Department of Health when it comes to things like security, testing. They are regulating testing and labeling. But when it comes to how those businesses run as a business, the Department of Health sort of says that's not our job to do anything about that. And there becomes some complications there where it's just Department of Health overseeing this. And the tax and revenue, the environment department, these departments don't really have any say in how this business goes, what sort of products people are able to buy, how they're using it. So it is sort of confusing. And so hopefully we can work through that a little bit.
That's what I realized when you and I started talking. I was like, what? There's just so much to this industry. There's so many elements. And the fact that an industry that has that many sort of subsectors isn't being regulated the way another industry would be by these agencies. Like, what is going on here? So there's so much to cover this season. We plan to start by catching everyone up on how we got to this place in time where we appear to be on the cusp of legalizing recreational use of cannabis. But Andy, it really all started decades ago with the fight for medical cannabis, right?
Yeah, that's right. Everyone remembers Gary Johnson, former Governor Gary Johnson, got a lot of flack in his second term for wanting to legalize this completely. But it goes before him in the late 70s. Lynn Pearson was one of the people we'll talk about in a subsequent episode. He was a veteran, Vietnam vet, who was really lobbying to make this a legitimate medicine for his cancer diagnosis. So we see waves of this from 1978 to about now, where it pops up into our purview. But like you said, it goes back a few decades where Lynn Pearson was pushing for this cannabis to be a legitimate medicine for his cancer. And then we saw some movement around the Gary Johnson administration. Then under Bill Richardson, there was a real, real big push to legalize this as a medicine. And we'll hear from Aaron Armstrong, who is Lynn and Aaron. They are both namesakes of the Lynn and Aaron Compassionate Use Act.
I first discovered the conversation that was happening and the efforts that were underway through a friend who had been interning actually at the Drug Policy Alliance and was sharing with me some of the stories that they were starting to hear from patients who were desperate to be able to use this medicine. And it just really struck a chord with me. You know, I was in the early years of my own fight. I was very much still learning how to manage symptoms and manage sort of the preparation and aftermath of radiation treatments. It really struck a chord with me. These stories really resonated in a really deep way. I was really moved to get involved. And beyond that, what I saw was patients who were incredibly frail, incredibly sick, some elderly, having to risk a lot to tell their stories when they were needing to actively be using marijuana for medical purposes, but without the cover of a law.
So we'll be talking to some of the major players who have already staked out a big chunk of this industry, but we'll also meet some up-and-coming entrepreneurs who are finding their own niches in building cannabis-based businesses. And there are so many of them. There are so many permutations to how people are involved in this business, which I thought was just fascinating. We'll hear from current and former lawmakers who talk about the policy implications of how we legalize. It's not dissimilar to many other industries. How will it be regulated? Who will benefit? Who will be the innovators? But it is different because there's this whole history of communities who bore the burden of this plant being illegal. And so when it comes to it being no longer illegal, there's a whole question of who gets to benefit.
Yeah. So the idea is we're going to have these discussions now leading up to the next legislative session in January and February. They are going to take this issue up. The governor has said she is really pushing for legalization. Of course, a lot of that has sort of been buried in current events, but it's almost definitely going to be an issue in this next legislative session. So we're going to have some better ideas of the nuances leading into the session, hopefully. There's issues of race. There's issues of representation. There's issues of who's really running the show in these organizations. And what we'll hear later is there is at least one person who is staunchly against legalization who is clearly in the business now.
Yes, that was one of the more interesting interviews. There are some people we talked to as there was a big push in the last session, which you covered. And some of the folks that we talked to felt that last attempt was way too complicated. We had this huge bill, like something like 200 pages, I think. It laid out a lot of policy initiatives and how they'd be implemented. Those included efforts to address some of those inequalities that I mentioned that fell on low-income communities, people of color, during the war on drugs. It also included a detailed regulatory structure, which, as we just mentioned, isn't really in existence right now. But some of the cannabis business owners who are quite successful, who are pushing for legalization, argued that the bill is just too complex and they felt like that doomed it. And that kind of detail should be left up to the rulemaking process. But there are others who say, no, these details are really important. They need to be codified in the bill to make sure there's equity in the industry.
So the notion that these are new concepts, the notion that the bill was too long, the notion that the bill was too complicated was simply, in my opinion, an excuse. The bill had been vetted thoroughly through the legislative process, and it had been vetted thoroughly through the governor's task force, which, as you may remember, started its work sometime last spring, 2019, and worked through the summer and into the fall with a wide and very diverse group of stakeholders at the table, including folks from the medical cannabis industry, patient rights advocates, law enforcement, public health professionals, and so many others.
So these are kind of the competing forces that we heard while we were talking to people.
Yeah, there's an element of legislation in general in this. That's sort of a conversation that I see happening a lot is this bill too long? Just in general, about anything, is this bill too long? Are we covering too many specifics? Anybody that follows legislation from point A to literally the end, point Z, I guess you would say, is how narrow do you go into something? Because the narrower you get in on an issue, you're bound to overlook something. You're bound to not address the one thing. And we've seen over the years, countless legislation questioned by courts. What did they mean by this? What did they mean by that? So there's a school of thought that if you make a general framework and then you can, like you mentioned, allow the regulatory department, whatever that department is, to come up with rules and specify this is, and we do have a little bit of that in Department of Health right now, but then there's debate of, well, they're going against the law by doing this rulemaking procedure. There was a lot of debate over how long the bill was, or bills, there was two bills. And I think one of the arguments for making a longer bill is that they have to address the medical law right now in whatever draft they come up with, which adds pages. Then there's the question of, do we trust whatever regulatory department is going to address these issues, race, quality, all those things that we're going to get into. And so we've already done a lot of work getting all this information for the listeners. We're really excited to share it with you all. But Megan, before we wrap up, is there anything that you wanted to share the question, some of those questions you had going into this?
When you were talking about the bill process, so again, you've got this kind of unique industry where it's like, it's about health issues, it's about agriculture issues, it's about regulation and licensing. It's about criminal issues in the past. If it's no longer going to be legal, what does that mean for people who had a criminal past that was based on using or selling this plant? So I think I was a little shocked as you and I started talking at how nascent the business is here, how new, in the sense that right now, as you said, the Department of Health is pretty much the agency in charge of overseeing the industry. That's because we have a medical program, but it's also an agriculture industry. It's a retail industry. It's a controlled substance. So this does risk invoking a cliche. You brought it up before. It really is kind of the Wild West right now. And I guess I didn't pay attention when I was a business reporter or over these last few years, just to those details. And you've covered a lot of that. People we interviewed would be talking, you would tell me stuff. I'm like, wait, go back. I don't understand. And so I guess I just thought that it would be a little more developed in terms of a regulatory framework than it is in terms of water usage and controlling that. So I see a lot of potential pitfalls right now if we don't get this right, if we do legalize. But I also see a lot of potential for innovation. And we found that's already happening. And I thought that was really interesting. Entrepreneurs are always innovative, interesting people to talk to. So those are kinds of the things that struck me as we worked on this over the last few months. What about you, Andy?
Everything you just said is exactly what I've been sort of having to deal with in the past 5 years. Obviously, my lens on this is the political nature of things. And so I haven't covered the business aspect of it as much, but there is a whole industry there. And there's even a debate on whether you call this an industry or a program. Going back to your comment about DOH being the sole regulatory department on this, it causes some issues there because the Department of Health doesn't, contrary to probably belief, they don't run the health inspections of restaurants. That's the Environment Department. And so right now the Environment Department doesn't have anything to do with going in and examining products on the shelf. And of course, that's part of why these bills get so long, because then you start figuring out which department is going to oversee this. There's even, I think, a proposal in one of the bills to create a cannabis commission. There's a lot of room to, like you said, be innovative. I remember a conversation with somebody as I was covering a meeting over this. I forget who it was, but she said, you know, New Mexico doesn't have to be like Illinois. Illinois was one of the last states more recently to legalize recreational use. And there was a task force put together by the governor in 2019. And they used the Illinois model as sort of a framework. And so this person I was talking to said, you know, we're New Mexico. That kind of brings into this conversation that we are New Mexico. We don't always have to do things the same way as Illinois or California, Colorado.
And I will say this, you know, I love New Mexico. I'm New Mexico through and through. And we have been at the top of all the wrong lists for a long time. And we have been at the bottom of all the good lists for a very long time. And if we play our cards right and do the right thing, New Mexico has an opportunity here.
And as we'll get into in some of these episodes, we don't have the same mechanism as Colorado or California did to put this to the voters. And so it's really going to put a lot of onus on the lawmakers to make sure that this is a good bill, that we're going to get the people that are maybe opposed to this. Another thing that I've been thinking about as we're talking to these people is this is a substance that a lot of people had experience with at some point in their youth, and they just don't anymore. There's a normalization that goes along with it. There's people that maybe used it or knew people that used it in the 70s, 80s, and had some sort of personal bias against it. And I think as we go forward to look at, this is a medical substance, and I can't think of any other substance out there that is simultaneously medical, where a doctor can say this helps you medically, but you can also theoretically go into the equivalent of a Walgreens to go buy it over the counter, right? So, and we did talk to someone, we'll get into one of these episodes later, where she said, it's kind of all medical, right? Even if you're buying it recreational, that we're using it in some sort of medical fashion, whether it's for mental health, physical. I guess the same idea that you're self-medicating if you use alcohol or Tylenol or anything like that. So I can't think of another issue like that where it takes up two different categories at the same time.
Cannabis can be useful for wellness in a way that shifts from day to day. And moment to moment, depending on what is thrown at us in our life, because it might shift day to day. You know, I might need some help with sleep. And then there's nothing wrong with needing something that gets you down on all fours to play with your kids, your grandkids over the weekend, that helps with the stay-at-home cabin fever that we're all experiencing and stimulates creativity. I don't think that those categories should have to fall under recreation. I think it's part of wellness. And in our American culture, we tend to shame people for pleasure and for seeking pleasure. And I think that pleasure should be more available in the human experience.
And that goes into the fact that children can use it medically, right? So if you have a condition and you're under 18, you can be recommended to use it. But yet if you go into a recreational shop, you have to be 21, according to the bills they're putting forward. So there's a whole lot of stuff that we could probably talk hours about.
That's what I realized as we were trying to put this together. Like, there's so much to talk about. And even over 10 episodes, we probably won't be able to get to all of it. And one question I had, Andy, was there not, or some lawmakers, am I wrong about this, they wanted possibly to do a constitutional amendment?
Yes, that is something that has been going on for a number of years, specifically under the Martinez administration. Remember, we talked about, or I had mentioned that she really didn't even want a medical program when she was campaigning for governor. And then when she actually won, I would have to assume she realized that this was not going to be a very popular decision to do away with this program that actually helps a lot of people. But she was very staunchly against even legalizing hemp. Now, that's a whole nother conversation, that was sort of an accidental thing that hemp became legal, because she didn't veto the bill in time. And the Supreme Court said, well, it's legal now. So looking at it through that lens, she really was adamantly opposed to legalization of cannabis that has THC in it. And The sort of game plan there was that lawmakers would put it as a constitutional amendment. A little background on our state constitution. Our state constitution does not allow for initiatives like other states do, where we can, or a proposition. California, I think, has a proposition program where you get enough signatures, it goes on the ballot. We don't have that. The closest thing we have is a constitutional amendment, because we don't want to just put constitutional amendments in willy-nilly, is that you have to let the voters decide on that. Now, the problem is it does become part of the Constitution. So then you have another lay of, right now, actually, another constitutional amendment that people are going to decide on is whether the Public Regulation Commission should be elected or appointed. And so that is going to be in the Constitution, however they vote on it. If they vote yes, it should be appointed, it will be part of the Constitution. And you get into a debate over how much change should we put into this Constitution? And should our Constitution say cannabis is legal? Now that we've got a governor sympathetic to this issue, I think the consensus is that we should not do a constitutional amendment for a number of reasons, as we'll get into another episode as well. It actually might take longer. The legislature has to vote 2/3 to approve this constitutional amendment, and then it goes to voters, and then it has to go back to the legislature to sort of work out the framework of how that law works. Yeah, I don't think we'll see a constitutional amendment in January, but the governor did say everything's on the table, so we'll see.
And that could be a much longer process. And of course, one of the factors we're looking at here is there's some element of at least trying to be among the states who are earlier in the process legalizing cannabis. I mean, there are already a number that have, but you lose some of the economic benefit by waiting, because after a while, well, everybody's legalized it. So there is the idea that you want to be on the cusp of the wave, not in the back, so you can get that economic benefit. But what's also interesting to me is we come across, and we were trying to find people to talk about hemp and water and cannabis and water. This is still on the federal level. So that makes all these questions. I think that's one reason maybe some lawmakers wanted a constitutional amendment. Like, well, we didn't do it. The voters chose it. It's that sort of reality of what it is at a federal level puts a whole other layer of complexity over this that you wouldn't have in almost any other business.
Yeah, the interesting point you just brought up about it being federally illegal, I'd had a conversation with somebody in the past year or so who worked for a government contractor. And I think one thing we as New Mexico tend to overlook is that we can legalize it all we want. It really doesn't change it for people that maybe want to use it recreationally, especially if they get drug tested for a job for a government contractor, right? At that point, it may as well not be legal in New Mexico at all, because if you're working for the feds or a contractor for the feds, it doesn't apply to you, right? It's still federally illegal. There's another issue in there that I don't know if we'll have time to get into it in any of these episodes, but one thing I had covered, I think last year, was the state did a big push for hiring new employees. They called it a rapid hire event. And I had a patient contact me and said, I really want to get a job working on a road construction crew, but because I have to use heavy equipment and I get drug tested, I wouldn't qualify for that job, right? So you do have, even on a state level, this contradictory issue of, yes, we want to normalize it. One of the last laws that they passed to update the current medical law does say it should be treated like any other medicine, but even still on the state level to get a state job, it's not treated like any other medicine, right? You could test positive for Valium, but because that's federally legal and it's in a certain schedule, it's fine, you know? So I think there is still some things that we need to work through as a state to figure out how normalized do we want to make this, and how are we okay with state employees using cannabis, not at work, but possibly testing positive for it. There's a whole scope of how long THC lasts in your body. My understanding is you can test positive for it weeks later and you haven't even touched it. You can use it on a Friday, go to work on Monday, possibly test positive for it, but you're not impaired. Whereas there's other substances that you could be impaired and you wouldn't be tested for.
One thing we should add that you might notice is that we're very specifically using the word cannabis rather than marijuana. Andy, why is that?
Well, some of the people we've spoken with, and I've heard this over the years, that marijuana sort of goes back to the early part of the century, where There was sort of this fear of marijuana coming across the border. Everyone's probably heard of the term reefer madness. There was a lot of movies in the I think 1920s.
Yes, one very specific movie in the 30s. Yes.
Yes, there was actually a movie called Reefer Madness. Yep. Yes, and there was a couple of them sort of in this propaganda category of movies, and there's this argument that the term marijuana, which is a Spanish word, was being used to sort of weaponize as a scare tactic, as this evil substance that was coming over from Mexico. So there's a lot of people in this world that really look back to that time and say, we should stop using that word. So yes, we have sort of chosen to use the word cannabis. It also, it's a little bit more of a technical term, right? That's the same reason we're not using the word pot or weed or any of those slang terms. I think that there is sort of a decent argument to use the technical term for this.
It's also, marijuana is a really highly politicized word. And you referred to that, I think William Randolph Hearst was behind a lot of those pushes to demonize marijuana. So people we've talked to who are advocates for legal cannabis or for medical cannabis are very adamant that they want to use that word and not marijuana because they want to be pragmatic and clear about the scientific benefits of this plant and not get caught up in the past political battles over it.
Yeah, and I think someone we talked to also pointed out to us that cannabis is actually a catch-all term for even hemp, right? It's the scientific name of a plant, and then you drill down to whether it has THC in it or not.
There's so much to talk about and so much complexity. So I'm really hoping that everyone will find this as fascinating as I did jumping into it as someone who didn't know anything about it, really.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm obviously bringing up some things that we probably are not going to get to. There's so much to cover in this. And I think even in our 10 episodes, we do cover a lot and there's still so much more to cover. So hopefully everyone can join us and listen in. New episodes are released every Tuesday, so be sure to subscribe today wherever you get your podcasts.
Growing Forward is a partnership between New Mexico PBS and New Mexico Political Report, funding provided by a grant from the New Mexico Local News Fund.
Our producers are Kevin McDonald and Bryce Dix. Special thanks also to New Mexico Political Report editor Matthew Reichbach. Music for this episode is by Christian Bjorklund, and our Growing Forward logo was graciously created by the uber-talented Catherine Conley.
We want to hear from you to share your story, suggest future episode topics, or just stay in touch. Send us an email at growingforward@nmpbs.org. Next week, we dive headfirst into the history of medical cannabis in New Mexico.
Until next week, thanks for listening and join us again next time for Growing Forward.